Welcome to the Everyone's a Critic Movie Review Podcast. I'm your co-host, Bob Zarrell. With me, as always, is professional film critic Sean Patrick. And joining us again this week is Zach Covemaker.
What's up?
Visit us at IHateCritics.net, Everyone's a Critic Podcast.com. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Our handle is Critics Pod. Our trailers are there, Sean's reviews, the podcast, and all around interaction when I look at it. And
You act like you got other things to do. I mean,
same joke every week. We're an Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, Spotify, Alexa, Stitcher. Subscribe to the show, write a review of the show, or read your review on the air. And then there is Patreon. IHateCritics.net/Patreon. The best way to help support the podcast. Our podcast merch tab is at our site, along with a PayPal link if you'd rather do a one-off donation. This week, let's get started with trailers. We have more trailers than movies this week, I think. We'll start with Between Two Ferns, the movie.
That's pretty funny. That's pretty funny. Zach Galifianakis is a funny dude. Yeah, this is a really funny trailer. I'm in. I love it. I can't wait.
Yeah, it's going to be him unhinged doing whatever he wants with Netflix money. It's going to be badass. It's going to be great.
Yeah, it's going to be so entirely stupid that it'll be... I mean, it's the perfect spot.
Yeah.
Probably didn't cost them $10 to make.
No.
Just looks
every
like
star is in it.
Yeah, like literally every white person in Hollywood's in it. Oh man, that's about all there is.
I'm a straight white male. I deserve this.
They need a victory.
It's been a while. Waves, A24.
Trey Schultz. I mean, this guy is incredible, you know? I read just the most amazing review of this movie just not too long ago. Cause it was in Venice, and now it's in Toronto. And just they called it epic. And that's certainly kind of what this trailer indicates, is something kind of epic.
You think? I thought the trailer didn't do it justice.
In terms of, like, the breadth of the family story that's going on there. But it could just be that, you know, Sterling K. Brown is just that good. He's basically just making me cry in the trailer.
See, I guess I know it's going to be good because of everyone involved. I just thought the trailer didn't really do it justice without having seen the movie, obviously. But it just kind of looked like your run-of-the-mill drama.
Yeah, I felt the same way. I was like, they got points for having John Legend. But honestly, I wasn't really interested. But I hadn't really heard about it before I watched the trailer, so... I'll have to keep an eye out on it. If it's that good, if you're hearing good things about it.
And he's a phenomenal director. I mean, Krisha is it Krisha?
Krisha. Oh yeah,
a fantastic movie. And It Comes at Night.
It Comes at Night. Yeah,
is a great horror movie that kind of went unnoticed because Get Out came out the same year. But just two phenomenal movies, and I'm sure this will be amazing. I just thought the trailer could have been more. I don't really know what you can do though without really spoiling the movie. Maybe Just Mercy.
I'm just going to forgive me here. Does Hollywood think that the rest of the country is just a series of unflattering haircuts? That's just the kind of that was the only thing I could think about during this trailer.
Jamie Foxx alone. A couple different haircuts.
I think I'm going to get that mustache going. That was inspirational. I loved that.
Wow. What's the thought process on that exactly? Because you've got the gigantic mustache, but then he's shaving the rest of it. Like, he really... Because it looks like this is just untended. You know, the whole mustache thing is untended. But then he's shaved the rest of his face. So apparently, this is intentional.
Right.
This is not what I should be thinking about in this trailer. This is based on a very wonderful true story about a man who fought against the death penalty in Alabama. That's a big story. This guy was featured on 60 Minutes. He's a big, you know, deal. And all I can think about is, like, Brie Larson is a beautiful woman who you put in this haircut, and I'm like, she just looks dowdy, and I know this is... It's okay for the rest of the country to look pretty, too.
Well, and then, I don't know, it... Like you said, it's a true story, played like a John Grisham book.
Kind of, yeah.
And, I mean, all I saw was... acting. I'm just like, look at me talking a southern accent, and for everybody, I mean, across the board.
Yeah, it reminds me of that movie, I think it was called Love, not too long ago, with Joel Edgerton and Ruth Negga, about the first interracial marriage in the South, and Yeah, you could just... acting! Look how important we are.
I mean, I think it'll be...
It could very well be very good, just the trailer isn't... like the haircut's not very flattering.
Right. I think at worst, you're probably getting like a Time to Kill or The Firm or something like that. Just a run-of-the-mill courtroom drama.
Not something I'm in a hurry to see, but I'll probably watch on my couch or something. Probably.
Yeah, I don't think it'll be bad. I just don't think it's going to be as good as it should be. Which, in that case, will kind of make me mad at the movie. Jojo Rabbit.
Jojo Rabbit. Really funny trailer. Weird online controversy. Everybody's kind of dunking on the Hollywood Reporter, because the Hollywood Reporter put up a think piece this weekend going, is Germany ready to laugh at Hitler? Germany's been laughing at Hitler for years. Like, they've got no problem laughing at Hitler. They've done Hitler jokes for a long time.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they had a sitcom with him in it. Where that was Britain. Okay, yeah. Never mind. But still,
Now they've done movies where Hitler gets like transported to modern times and has to find a way to to find his way in society. Like, the just weird shit that they've done with Hitler over the years. So is Germany ready to laugh at Hitler? Yeah, it's been a while, guys. But I mean, the trailer's really funny. Taika Waititi is a really funny guy, and he's really found a very unique approach to this particular story.
Yeah, I think it looks phenomenal. I mean, Hitler is an imaginary friend. Pretty. Just, you know, you go into the pitch room and that's what you start with. It's pretty amazing.
Huge Taika Waititi fan. Like, I'm in. Because I remember hearing him talk about it. I think it was like some interview for Thor. He mentioned that his next movie was this. Instantly, I'm like, here's my money. Take it. I want it. Like, I watch What We Do in the Shadows, like, weekly. I love his shit. I'm in.
Yeah. Great cast. Just looks like a lot of fun. And then Bad Boys for Life. Did they lose their chemistry?
I kind of.
Or is it just a bad trailer?
I think maybe Martin Lawrence is just out of practice. Or maybe they both are.
Maybe, but I don't know. I thought he was better than Will Smith. They just seemed to clash. Like, you have the movie star and the comedian, and they just weren't bouncing off each other.
Will's gotten really odd. He's gotten more stiff as he's gotten older. As he gets older, he gets more stiff, less,
right,
charismatic for some reason.
Yeah, I'm hoping it's just a bad trailer, because I do like the other two. Like, they're kind of like guilty pleasure movies for me, so I'm just hoping they just cut some bad stuff. I
hated Bad Boys 2. I thought it was a piece of shit. And then, it's funny because somebody I work for, who I take direction from on a regular basis, huge Bad Boys 2 fan. And I just kind of, okay, fine. Just accept it.
I can one up that. Someone that works for me, I was asking if they're going to go see It too, and she was like, no, it's just too evil. That's just not a type of movie I want to go see. But I'm really looking forward to Angel Has Fallen. And I'm like,
oh, wow.
And I'm like, that might be the worst movie of the year. And she goes, but it makes you think. And I'm like, yeah, it makes you think who would go see this movie. And then she finished it up. It makes you think, what if it was Trump? And I'm like, what?
What are you talking about?
She's a Trump supporter.
Okay.
She's also Hispanic.
It's wild.
Really odd. But yeah, it it was an interesting conversation that didn't last very long. But yeah, I don't remember Bad Boys 2. I know I've seen them, but like both of them are one-offs and never went back to them. And the January release date doesn't give me a lot of confidence.
That is a weird release date. That is very odd.
You would think this could do, maybe not Fast and Furious numbers, but around that release.
I was looking at it thinking they're probably putting this out at Christmas, putting it out at that point, a big release weekend.
Right. Maybe they'll do Select Cities. Speaking of Select Cities, did you see Fred Durst's movie? Made like $3,000 opening night.
Yeah,
I did not see it.
But I mean, I'm talking about the news.
I watched. So there's this a critic on YouTube named Chris Stuckman, who's a really great critic, and he does this feature on his show called Hilariosity, where he looks at a bad movie, and he's the first time ever he's done a done one like in the immediate aftermath of a release of a movie, because he had the chance to watch this one in theaters by himself because no one else went to see it, and his review is hysterical. But he's got all these amazing clips of John Travolta in the single worst performance I've ever seen from an actor. Just from these clips, he's so bad. It's embarrassingly bad.
And that's the director's fault. I mean, it's the choices you make, I guess, but, you know, it's up to the director to rein him in.
There's a scene in this movie where Devon Sawa, who plays the action star that he's obsessed with, Travolta's character is obsessed with, he's driving his son around in his car, and he goes, "You want to listen to some Limp Bizkit?" And then he turns on Limp Bizkit, and they drive, and they listen to Limp Bizkit. And then they start, in his head, he starts imagining Limp Bizkit music video while he's driving.
Oh, I'm going to have to buy this. Like, I have to see this.
That surprises me.
Yeah. Oh. Now, just imagine John Travolta with, like, a pretty severe head injury, and then, like, recovering from that, but having lessened mental faculties. Like, I mean, Lou Ferrigno in Cage has more dignity than Travolta has in this movie.
You're only selling me on it. Like, you're only making that purchase on Vudu that much easier, man. Oh, I can't wait.
I'll probably be there before you know it.
Oh, it's going to sit there right next to Best Friends. It's going to be a great time.
I love Best Friends. Oh.
It Chapter 2.
It Chapter 2, picking up the story from the 2017 version, the second half, this time with the adults replacing the kids. You've got James McAvoy, you've got Isaiah Mustafa, Jessica Chastain, Jay Ryan.
Bill Hader,
other guy who plays the least important character that I can never remember, Eddie. Eddie's the worst character in both movies, and he's just the worst overall. I can't ever remember him. Even his plot line, he's the one. I was writing my review of It, and I'm like, I run down all the characters, and I go, oh yeah, I forgot Eddie. And so I had to add him back in.
See, it's weird, because him, Bill, and Beverly, the only three I can remember.
Yeah, I was going to say, they were pretty much the spotlight the whole time.
I mean, I guess Bill Hader's character kind of ended up being more spotlighty than I expected, but...
Yeah. So, basically, the idea is 27 years later, Pennywise is returning, and he begins with a murder of a gay man on the side of a river, and then which has absolutely no bearing on the rest of the movie. Those characters never come back. There's no point to this scene whatsoever other than just elongating this already overlong movie. I really liked the first one, and we talked about it. I liked it a lot. This one is a gigantic waste of time. This is not good. This doesn't pick up really very well in anything that they did right in the first film. I mean, we've got even less Pennywise in this, which is, he was the best part of the first film. There's even less of him here. James McAvoy is so off in this movie. Everything he does is just...
They're all off except Bill Hader.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Fair enough.
Even Jessica Chastain, which, I mean, she's not bad, but they're all... you can tell they're trying to be the kids.
Yes, and that is definitely where James McAvoy is struggling, because...
He's struggling,
and because he's got that English accent, you know, he's not an American actor, and you take him trying to ape what Jordan Lieberher did, and try and do that with a stutter, and his performance becomes incredibly stilted. But then you take all of these characters and you desperately underwrite them, and I don't want to hear about the book. I don't care about the book. I've read the book.
Book sucks.
The book sucks. That too.
I read it this week. All of a sudden, I get to the end. I'm like, they did what? How did they? The first one didn't end that way at all.
The book sucks. Yes, but all the stuff that's in the book doesn't matter to the movie.
No,
and I always have to remind people of this because people will always say, "Well, in the book, this happened to explain that." Well, it's not in the movie, so it doesn't really matter to me.
Mm-hmm. And it doesn't even, especially in this case, all the turtles in this movie mean nothing.
But there's so many examples. The opening kill, the gay couple,
right.
That is there essentially to underline something that is revealed later on in the movie about another character. But it's not necessary. You could do the same thing in a less amount of time with a scene with that character and have the same impactful reveal at the end. You don't need this opening kill, especially when the next thing you see is Pennywise doing what Pennywise was supposed to do, which is kill children. That's what he does. You've got a scene of him eating a little girl underneath some bleachers. There you go. Take what you did with Mike in the previous scene, put that behind the little girl scene. That starts him calling all the people back to come back to Derry, and you started your movie in a way that makes sense, as opposed to this elongated scene of this gay couple getting beat up by these kids in Derry. And getting one of them gets thrown off a bridge and eaten by Pennywise. This adds nothing to it. None of these characters come back. Right. Nothing.
The only way that
consequence.
Like I'll say in the book, and I'm saying this to for only the purposes in the book, they go in, they investigate a little bit, and the clown gets brought up. And sure, if you want to do that, one, you're wasting our time. But at least then you're explaining why Pennywise is back. Otherwise, this has no bearing. That there's no news report on it. Just a gay man dies. And even that big reveal that's impactful wasn't impactful. Mm. It was just kind of like, you know where they're going with it, and it's like they're trying too hard with the big reveal.
Yeah, it just kind of like happened and fizzled out. Like and, they wanted
well, they
to do something
teased it the
bigger,
whole time, too, and it was just kind of... I don't know. There's a way to... I don't know.
But again, none of these things have
any bearing.
Right, but they're also poorly set up. Mm-hmm. I mean, you've got the character... Let's go back to the character of Bill, played by McAvoy. You set up his thing about him being a screenwriter in Hollywood and being an author who apparently struggles with the endings of his book, although he doesn't seem to think so. So... His arc, from what I've been told by other people, is that you know he has a hard time writing endings, and he's going to learn by the end of the movie how to write a proper ending to a story. But you don't set that up because he doesn't realize there's anything wrong with the endings that he does. All you do in that scene with him and his wife is underline that she's kind of bitchy and kind of disloyal and not honest with him until this moment, and then... You have a Peter Bogdanovich cameo that means absolutely nothing. Nobody knows other than us who Peter Bogdanovich is. It's so unnecessary. But Peter Bogdanovich just comes off like an asshole director who just doesn't like the ending that he wrote. Like, it's not a... So what, this doesn't underline anything about his journey. This isn't something he's going to take with him to Derry. So it's just this meaningless setup. But all these characters have this, like even with Jessica Chastain and the growing up into, you know, she grows up being abused as a child. She's now in an abusive marriage. That's, you know, that's rather standard psychology that kind of happens to some people. But when she goes to Derry, does she take any of that with her? No. I mean, she goes back to her dad's house and she has some flashbacks, but there's no real depth to that. The character of Ben has zero depth whatsoever. I mean, he goes from being a little fat kid to being this really handsome dude, and it's supposed to be he goes back to Derry and he's less confident like he was when he was a kid, but J. Ryan gives you none of that. He gives you absolutely none of that lack of confidence that he's supposed to have.
The only thing I thought was good about him is he does really look like if that kid had grown up and gotten in shape, he looks a lot like him in the eyes and the face, and I was like, that's pretty good.
The casting.
From appearance alone, great casting.
Yeah.
But otherwise, it was them literally just trying to be the kids actors, and it. Other than Bill, I think Bill Hader kind of shined, I guess. But I mean, the only thing that really worked for it is the comedy. If I'm being honest, that was the closest thing to entertainment was the comedy, and I guess a few jump scares. But I was really let down.
The special effects are let down as well. I mean, the scene from the trailer with Jessica Chastain and the old woman. Builds with tension. It bubbles with suspense. You don't know where this is going to go. And you're watching it in the movie and you're kind of, okay, I can feel this. I'm excited. What's going to happen? And I honestly would have been more frightened if she'd just come out of there naked as that old woman.
Oh, I laughed.
That would have been more frightening.
The theater broke out in laughter.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was like, it looked like that thing that Luke Skywalker milked in The Last Jedi. It just charged.
Really did.
Oh, my God.
Because of her boobs. I mean, it was
silly
pure comedy.
The Andorran wench. She just showed up. Oh, man.
It was silly looking. It really was. And that happened more than once in the movie, with the zombie leper character in the basement of the pharmacy was terrible looking. Mm-hmm. The guy who was hanging out with Henry, the dead friend of his,
right,
looked silly looking. And Henry is the least important character you could ever imagine. I mean, what a waste of screen time. His arc finished in the first movie. He was done in the first movie. And I know he has some more meaning in the book, but in the movie, his arc ended in that first movie when he got caught and arrested and taken away. That's his arc. He's done. You bring him back in this movie, all he does is stab Eddie in the face, and then he's over with. Done. What does that add to this movie? What purpose did that serve in any way?
It gave us that awesome visual of the zombie driving a car. I want to see a movie about that. Like but a again, psycho and a zombie driving around killing people.
But you're, I mean, it was funny in that, so I guess on an entertainment level, it worked, but it wasn't, I mean, it's, he pulled just enough out of the book to satisfy, maybe satisfy is not the right word, but there's enough in the book that's in this movie that it's like, well, I put it in there. But he didn't develop any of it. It's not just Henry. It's everything. They, you know, between Beverly's husband, that played out more. Instead, they just tell you about it. Mm-hmm. Bill's wife plays a huge role in the book. They just had one scene where they're just to show her. Like, a totally pointless scene that essentially just became a callback joke the rest of the movie.
Yeah, or you know, will he cheat on her becomes the question. Like
in the book, in here, for like 2 seconds.
2 seconds,
but
yeah.
It hardly
then
lasts.
They have that brother-sister kiss, and it's like over with.
Yeah. It was. I think that happened, and then by the end of the movie, you're just sitting there thinking, like, they kissed, right? Like, I didn't imagine that.
And it's all supposed to, you know, lead to the Ben Beverly
route, right.
But it's so poorly done and just, it's just, I don't know. They didn't take their time with anything, yet they made an overlong movie.
Yeah.
Doesn't make any sense. And the weird thing is, it's like, really, if you want to cut out 45 minutes of it, lose the flashbacks. Unfortunately, the kids are the best actors in the movie. So, I you know, it's you almost got to go back to the drawing board.
The special effects to use to de-age the kids. It's Henry Cavill in Justice League. Good.
Warner Brothers, man. They're just they know what they're doing. They want to be Disney so bad.
Oh, it was embarrassing. Why did they just shoot these scenes while they were making the first movie? Would that have made sense?
I thought that was the plan. I mean, they would have just used the same sets. Just
or, I mean, they did the first. They made it sound like they're going to do the kids in one movie, the adults in the other.
Yeah.
They essentially made the book with part two, and the first one was part of the book, you know, but they made the whole book in part two. So I don't understand the point of that. It was like, it was just, I don't know.
Did they think we forgot everything that happened to the first movie?
And then just repeating the exact same lines, some of the times was just totally pointless. And
the whole totem gathering thing, like, I didn't even, I remembered some of it, but then, like, when did we ever establish Richie and the token? When was that ever established?
In this movie.
Suddenly, just out of nowhere, this token. Oh, this is my totem.
In this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For a 30-second scene.
Yeah, it's because he mentioned in the first movie he was going to go play Street Fighter. So, mentioned that. There you go. I don't know, man.
This is a bad movie. And it's really unfortunate because the first movie is a genuinely good movie. And it just makes it that much more disappointing.
Yeah, I mean, I liked the first movie. I didn't love it, and I say that because there's movies like Get Out, Midsommar.
Sure.
It Comes at Night. No, I'll take those horror movies any day, twice on Sunday to this. The first one, even, but the first one was a good blockbuster horror movie. But that's what it was—a blockbuster horror movie, nothing more, nothing
sure.
less.
I agree with that. Back to Pennywise. Skarsgård is a really good actor.
Mm-hmm.
Skarsgård is a really good actor, and he's really great at playing Pennywise. And what he was great at is his amazing physicality that he had. And you know, you've got when you go back to the first film, he's got, you know, the dance scene he's got in that movie is fucking creepy as hell. The scene with him where Mike sees him for the first time, where he's standing sideways looking down at him. You've got him coming out of the refrigerator in the first movie. That's really great. Which of any of these in this movie has any of that same impact? Not one scene, not one visual of Pennywise in this movie, it holds a candle to any of the ones that he had in the first film.
I did like the visual of him floating down with the balloon singing to Richie. Because it was like, I don't know how they shot it like so bright and the people in the background are kind of just like bopping along while he was singing. I did like that, but I get what you're saying. Like there wasn't enough of him doing the goofy shit. Like Bill Hader, like he even did the dance, but we didn't see it do the dance at all. Like I kind of wanted to see that.
Right. Like you mentioned the scene with the girl under the bleachers. That was a good scene. But
that was good.
You're talking, I mean, there's just a handful. Yeah. You know, right. The one you mentioned, there's not many. And they relied on jump scares too much, which work for blockbuster movies. And they were effective, you know, especially if you don't go to a lot of movies. But to me, it's those jump scares and the comedy that made this at least entertaining. But definitely disappointing.
I know I got like a little excited here and there. I got a little tense here and there. So there's effective stuff in there, but for the most part, there's a lot of repeated shit. They try to leave town multiple times and have to be taught. Each one of them has to be individually talked out of leaving more than one time, and it just everything just seems to make this movie that much longer and feel that much longer.
Yeah. Well, while leaving most of the good stuff in the book out of it. And I'm not talking about the
sewer scene.
Oh my god.
There's a child orgy in the book.
And I'm listening to this book at work. I didn't read it. I did the audiobook and all of a sudden I'm just like, "What? Hold on." I'm like, "Come on." I mean,
just yeah. Stephen King's in the movie. Who cares?
Yeah.
Well, that was the thing. Was they kept talking about bad endings, and I kind of think the book had a bad ending.
See, are they making
a joke at Stephen King's expense?
What I thought they were or he was making a joke about it or something. Yeah, like I thought that's what the reference was going to be, as opposed to that's his arc. Like he never knows how to create an ending until this ends. Well,
even Pet Sematary, I read that earlier this year when that movie came out. Phenomenal book until the very last chapter when all hell breaks loose. I'm like, you could have ended it and it would have been a creepy, dark ass movie. And instead, you got this, you know, basically what happens in both movies. It's so stupid. But yeah, I thought that was where they're going with it. And then he makes a joke too. So I don't.
Yeah. I like, for the most part, I'll say I did enjoy the movie. But. I kept looking at my phone like the whole time.
Yeah.
And I feel like they're really the only reason why I enjoyed it so much is because last couple weeks I haven't made it out to the movies. So this is like a special time, but I giggled at all the weird special effects like that, like out of the fortune cookie when that little like bug baby like crawled out.
Yeah.
I laughed so hard. Like this was enjoyable just from like the shitty, like, just weird creatures that kept crawling out of everywhere.
Yeah, even them destroying the restaurant, and then, you know, all of a sudden, there's no creatures.
Yeah.
Just, that was funny. But again, I found it more funny than anything else. And because of that, I like Bill Hader the best in the movie. And it's weird to say that with James McAvoy and Jessica Chastain in the movie. But really, Bill and Beverly should have been more main characters, and it was more ensemble. And I think that was a mistake.
Absolutely.
Know. There's a lot of mistakes.
Yeah, that guy who plays Eddie is just the worst. I just couldn't. I mean, they refer to his wife in this movie. We never see her, but they're making jokes about her being just like his mom in the first movie. And Richie refers to her as being really fat. And like, what was the point of that?
Yeah,
What did that add to the movie?
Right. All it was slight references to the book. And not enough to, it's like, don't worry about the references. If you're going to use something from the book, you know, spend the time like the book did. Otherwise, leave it out. You know, Henry didn't have to come back.
No.
But if you're going to bring him back, make him more of a main character like he did in the book. You know, that's, yeah, I'm starting to repeat myself like the movie. But yeah, it was entertaining, but just disappointing, I guess is how I'll leave
Highly
it.
Highly inessential.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Sallow. Sorry.
So let's set this up. When last time Cub was here, we found out he'd never seen Sallow before.
And like everybody else has.
Yeah.
Seen it.
And so Bob just happens to have Sallow.
Pretty sure me, you, and Josh have it.
It's possible.
Unless I still have your copy.
Best Christmas ever.
Oh.
Not in Martyrs.
But yeah, Cove, your first experience with Sallow.
You know,
your last experience was
finding ways to masturbate before the internet must have sucked. You guys had this, that Jenna Jameson firefighter video, and then like, I guess Demi Moore. like this sucked. This was a hard time. This is how I started my Sunday. This is today. This was awful.
Skip church to go watch that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, man. Like, at first, like, okay, they kept doing the weird shit. Like, they did the whole, the one man, was he punishing a woman by pooping on the floor? I don't really know. But I laughed really hard. And then it just kept, like, the scene just kept going. Like, she ate the poop. And then they just kept eating poop. was, like, at first I was like, that's hilarious. And then I was like, I started eating breakfast 5 minutes ago.
I have sausage links. What the hell?
Yeah. Fuck you, Jimmy Dean. Yeah, that was a weird time. There was the one guy offering up rump roast at dinner. There was whatever that ending. I don't even really. I must have missed something because it kind of just it got dark and then it just kind of ended. The one guy with the weird kooky eye. Ugh, I don't like it. I don't ever want to watch that again.
So you made it all the way through?
Oh, I did it. Yeah, trust me, man. I did it all the way to the binoculars. Like I went all the way to credits.
Oh, they're burning dicks off. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh man.
That's, I mean, it's supposed to be a good movie. It's just hard to.
Yes, I don't care.
I mean, I guess it serves a purpose, and I feel like when we talked about it, Josh didn't think it was as bad as he thought it was. Like, it's gonna be as hard to watch as we had built it up, but I don't know. Like, my wife literally threw up. Like, had to leave the room to go to the throw up.
I feel like we all like overreacted with Two Girls, One Cup. This existed out there. This was another thing. We overreacted.
I never did watch that.
Oh, it's wonderful.
Yeah, I know what it is.
I only need the reputation. I don't really know what to make of Sallow. I've never really known what to make of Sallow other than it's, you know, it's challenging. It's a movie that is subversive, for sure. Pasolini is a fine filmmaker.
Yeah, I mean, everything it looked good, like, from an art perspective. It was just like, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'm not trying to kink shame. People are into what they're into, but I'm not. It's not really my cup of tea.
Well, I mean, it was more of a torture movie.
I know, but there's still those people out there, man.
Well, it's right, but the movie was more about power and corruption and about whatever government. I don't even remember.
What were they trying to, like? Was it just really they just picked people and they were like just torturing for the hell of it? Because I missed really what the point of it was.
It was it was kind of a show on abuse of power, and how far people can take power. And I think it's kind of a protest movie for the, I don't even remember. I haven't done much research on Sal. I forgot we gave it to you to begin with, so I'm not prepared.
Yeah, I mean, no, you're right. That's what it's basically unchecked power. This is kind of the extreme example of what happens when you allow the rich and the powerful to kind of just grow to a degree that they have there's no control on them.
And, I mean, we've heard the stories in history, like those kings killing their wives and whatnot. I mean, there's. But, yeah, this is just them showing it to us.
Yeah, that was fun.
Over and over and over again.
There are videos where people on YouTube where people are challenged to watch Sallow. You just watch their reaction to watching Sallow.
Like I said earlier, I'm really glad I didn't watch this with my girlfriend. Like when I walked in the house with it, like, I could have been holding, like, a bag of crack, a gun, and, like, a baby that kind of looked like me, and she still would have looked straight at that movie, been like, what the fuck is that? Because I walked in with, like, I had groceries, and she immediately was like, what the fuck is that? And I'm like, I don't know, Google it, I haven't got a chance yet.
be careful Googling it,
though. Yeah, she
you'll,
went... She
you'll
went
end up
straight.
On a list.
She went straight there, and she looked at me, she's like, have you looked up what this is yet? And I'm like, nope, fuck. I was like, I'll figure it out. I'll watch it when you're not around.
You brought this into our house.
Holding it for a friend, I promise.
I guess I'm the one who brought it to the podcast. My brother was, I don't know, he always had these lists of movies that, you know, now everybody has them because it's on the internet, but he was like, he never wanted to watch it because he didn't want to end up on a list somewhere. But I went and rented it on Netflix because at that time they had everything, and my wife and I watched it, and it was just like, oh my God. I didn't have any idea what it was going into it. But it was on a list of 100 movies you must see before you die or something like that.
Yeah,
really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Huh. It's supposed to be good. It's just hard to defend it or explain why it's good.
Yeah, I think Cousin Jeff told me about it and his twisted sense of humor.
Well, and the other one that I've never actually seen it. I don't know if it's on that list or not. The Siberian or some.
Oh, yeah. I know which one you're talking about. Yeah.
I can't remember the name of it, but it's supposed to be the most messed up movie ever. And
yeah, I know which one you're.
I can't remember the name of it. Siberian something. Siberian film or something like that. A Serbian film.
Serbian film. Yeah.
Siberian.
A Serbian film is supposed to be even worse than this. So.
Really?
Yeah.
Like same content or is it just like violent?
I think more rapey.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Less poop.
Still the greatest poop scene in the movie. Hall Pass.
Yeah. I think about that scene way too often.
I get really grossed out by that type of thing. Like I usually like Formula 51 with Samuel L. Jackson has a scene where he feeds the bad guys a bunch of laxatives and they start having explosive diarrhea and I got up and walked out. I was disgusted. There's a scene in the movie College where they're pouring drinks through some guy's ass and another guy's laying under it and he's got to drink the drink coming out of the guy's ass. I got up and walked out. Hall Pass, they've got an explosive diarrhea scene in there, and I mean it was the first time I ever laughed at a shit joke in my entire career. I felt this mixture of shame and horror and utter delight.
Have you ever seen American Vandal on Netflix? It's a TV
no.
series. Okay. The second season opens with my favorite poop joke ever. Like, I will admit, I am a fan of the occasional poop joke. Like, I'm not gonna lie to you guys. I'm a little immature about that shit, literally. But in that movie, or in that show, it all starts off with someone drugging, I think it's the lemonade, at a school cafeteria. And it shows this hyper-dramatic, like, scene where all these kids are crying and pooping their pants. And it is the hardest I think I've ever laughed in my entire life.
I didn't mind the Zach and Mary poop joke. It was gross.
Oh, yeah.
It was gross, but that was funny.
I didn't laugh. Right. That one did kind of turn my stomach a little bit. Yeah. I still love Zach and Mary, but yeah.
Anyway, let's move on to our classic.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the main event for the linear, legitimate, and universally recognized, undisputed classic.
Notorious 1946, that was the year it came out. It's not part of the name.
You're going to get so much hate. Like it's
the first Hitchcock movie we don't like?
I think so. I mean, for me it is. Notorious is the story of a fall of a woman whose father is a spy. He gets captured. She gets basically forced into becoming a spy for the Americans now, and she's sent to Brazil to enter into a relationship with Claude Rains, who's essentially working with the Nazis in secret. She's got to infiltrate his life, and she does by marrying him. Meanwhile, she's supposed to be in love with Cary Grant, who's her handler, her spy handler. The whole thing with her and Cary Grant, though, is so rushed. Mm-hmm. And then the whole movie turns on us buying into just how much those two have fallen in love and the pain and agony of them being apart in this
way.
Even
though they barely know each other.
Right? I mean, I felt like there was a reel of the movie missing where we're supposed to see the entirety of their romance that's so deep and meaningful that's going to drive the rest of the movie. But no, the movie just sort of it tracks along at a pace that is like, do you have to be somewhere else, Hitchcock? Is there somewhere else you got to be? Like, this is going along. Like, just they go from being angry toward each other to, oh my God, this is the greatest love story of all time, and fall into my arms, and I'll be back with the champagne. And then he comes back and like, okay, I hate you now. You have to go be with this guy.
It ended up being the perfect classic for it. I mean, it really did, just because of the rushed, you know, no development. You know, you have to rely on certain things and just accept certain things for the rest of the movie to work. And entertaining, easy to watch.
Yeah. I mean, Cary Grant's a charming guy, always has been. And he's charming here. It's just, it's moving so quickly. You're like, hey, what, hang on, sorry.
I don't buy that he's jealous right now.
Yeah, exactly. Like, he barely knows this person.
He barely knows her. He's a CIA agent or a spy or whatever the hell he is. So he should be more professional than that. And more, there's even more than that. And then she gets jealous. I don't know. The whole thing is just kind of, but again, it's entertaining. It reminds me of the cartoons I grew up watching. I mean, they're so much inspired by these old movies that
I think people of the time, they had such a huge crush on Bergman and such a huge crush on Cary Grant that they kind of forgave the lack of any kind of real build up to this romance. And when you're, and then going in as a Hitchcock fan and thinking about how amazing he is at creating suspense, and just kind of figuring, okay, we're going to be in for some really high level suspense here. He's going to create some really great scenes of suspense. I guess there are a couple, like there's a couple of good things about the key work in this is fine, but there's not.
But not great. It's not Hitchcock. Great. It's just like, okay, let's show the champagne one more time. Well, there's three bottles left now. You better hurry. Ooh, he accidentally knocked it over. Oh, I mean, he figured everything out because he knocked that bottle over. What if he knocked this one over? What did the say? Just not, it's a little bit safer or simpler than Hitchcock, that I'm used to Hitchcock with, at least.
So much more focused on the romance than anything to do with spies, with the spy stuff. And that's really what, I was kind of there for the spy thing. So, you know, failure on my part of expectations maybe, but they've also been, had those expectations built by, you know, years of great suspense from Alfred Hitchcock.
Well, yeah, you said that before with like Guillermo del Toro and that scary movie that came out a couple weeks ago, even though he didn't make it, he was a producer, just having his name on it puts you at a disadvantage. And same thing here. Now it's not just Hitchcock, it's Cary Grant and Bergman as well. So
my mom loved this movie. She was a huge fan, but then she had a huge crush on Cary Grant always, and he could do no wrong. And so this movie was wonderful for her. And she bought in completely that a woman would take 2 seconds to fall in love with Cary Grant. Because that's how she felt.
Yeah.
So I understand that, but at the same time, when I'm approaching it like I do, I need more. I needed more depth to that romance. Then they go from he's telling her what she's going to do, she's not happy about it. Then okay, we're in love now, and it's the greatest love story of all time, and it's going to drive the plot of the rest of the movie that we're apart and we're jealous and we're angry about it. I didn't buy it.
Right.
Yeah, I wasn't able to get a copy of it, so I wasn't able to see it myself. I did think about watching Notorious, the Biggie Smalls movie. Because I did have access to that, but I...
It was on YouTube. It didn't look good. But, yeah. Yeah, it was... I mean, like I said, perfect, you know, sister to It. I mean, it's a lot like that. Entertaining. I understand why people like it. It just didn't
Released,
work for me.
Released this weekend in 1946.
Really?
Yeah. Oddly enough, we didn't even plan that. It just happened to be that Notorious was released this weekend in 1946.
Damn.
Just take you, yeah, I know, right? Weird. We'd actually planned this just to take you inside a little bit. We were going to watch Spy. We thought Spy, Sacha Baron Cohen's thing on Netflix, was a movie. And no, it's a TV series. They're like, fuck that. Yeah. Don't get time for this.
Yeah, no. But it ended up working out because it's a lot like this movie. Only no clowns.
All right. The thing that everybody's been waiting for.
1989. Kickboxer.
You bastard.
You actually watched it.
I did watch Kickboxer. It's just basically Bloodsport.
Yeah.
Without Kumite. And without Kumite, it's less entertaining.
Then we can move on to the next one. What is it? It's Rambo meets Rain Man meets Roadhouse meets
The Godfather. Bloodsport.
The Godfather.
Like a little splash of Shazam.
Reb Brown, Lou Ferrigno in Cage. And I don't know why I have a memory of this movie. I don't really, now that I watch it, I'm like, where did I get this from? But I remember, for some reason, this being like one of the first, I don't know, fight movies like this. But then, it, of course, it's like, it, all it is just basically Kickboxer. And
so you just so watched really the last 20 minutes.
this movie looks so weird. Everything is so off. It begins in a Vietnam movie with Reb Brown and Ferrigno are in Vietnam, and Ferrigno gets shot in the head, but not killed. It just turns him into a toddler. And they come home and they open a bar, and these two Italian guys walk in and see Ferrigno, and they think, oh, he'll be perfect for this underground fighting thing that we do that we're in debt for because our guy keeps getting killed. Run by the Asian mob. And
but they keep walking into like bar fights.
Yeah.
They're winning. So the Roadhouse comes in.
I mean, it's so funny. Reb Brown is just punching everybody. He's like even a better fighter than Ferrigno is, but Ferrigno's the one they want because he's huge.
Right.
So bad. Everything about this movie is, but that's the weird thing is that I wanted it to be so much worse than it was. That's like, it's not necessarily competent. It's bad, but in a really boring way.
It's not as fun.
Yeah.
Nah.
Ferrigno, like I said, I was talking about the Fanatic earlier in the show about Travolta and how embarrassing his like man-child performance is. And that character doesn't even have brain damage. He's just fucking weirdo. This one, he's got like brain damage, but he's just all he does is just respond to everything with a question. That's basically his idea of acting, like he's brain dead. He talks in a little soft voice, and then he responds to everything with a question.
Yeah. I said it last week, but it seems like they just use the beginning of it. Because he can't hear very well or at all, I'm not really sure, he doesn't talk normal. So they seems like they were using that whole premise of the movie, the beginning, just to explain why he doesn't talk right. So they made him a toddler in a giant man's body, which is kind of insulting, or really insulting, borderline offensive, I guess. But he agreed to do it, and there is a Cage 2.
There is a Cage 2. I saw that.
Oh.
How is there a Cage 2?
Cage 2 Electric Boogaloo.
They, like, punch his brain back to working or something.
He goes back to college. Finally makes something of his life.
Did you enjoy this, Cove?
Not really. I mean, it was entertaining. Like, it was. I didn't know this. I didn't even know about this movie. So that was fun in and of itself. And then, like, the whole time I kept thinking, because the dude's name is Billy, and he's a child trapped in a grown man's body, and I love Shazam. So that's the entire time I'm just thinking, this is, like, kind of depressing Bloodsport Shazam. Like, it was weird. It was weird. I also watched that today, right after the poop movie. And it was a nice palate cleanser, yeah. Later I'm going to watch Shameless, so I'm going to fix it all. But yeah, it was a fun day.
I mean, I had more fun reading the summary last week.
Yeah.
Because Sean was like, that's an MMA movie, I think, like the first mixed martial arts movie. Like, no, it looks like it's a war movie. And then I started reading the summary, and it just went from literally like a Rambo movie to Roadhouse to Rain Man to, I mean, it was just kind of everything.
Those two Italian, I can't, it's so weird that they keep focusing on, like, there's this female character in the movie who they put a lot of focus on her. She's a reporter, and she's taking pictures of this underground cage fighting, but she's in the movie for the first half of the movie. You keep seeing her, she says nothing. She says absolutely nothing. Like, you don't know who she is. She's never introduced. You're kind of visually cued by her camera that she's a journalist. That's about it.
She's mostly just standing there looking at other people talk.
Yeah. She has no role whatsoever in how the movie plays out. Like,
I think I'd rather watch this than No Holds Barred, though. Because that was not as fun bad as I was hoping either.
Oh, there's a shit joke that was pretty funny, though. It wasn't.
It's only funny because you can imagine.
I haven't.
It's just Hulk Hogan just holding a guy who shits himself.
I'm in.
Dookie!
What? Well, the only reason it's funny is because you can picture Vince McMahon writing it.
He's like, he's gonna poop.
Because I knew about it, and then when you actually watch the movie, it's just like, oh, it's not as funny as it should be.
I'm going to look that scene up, though.
Maybe out of context, it'd be more fun. That's a quick one. Next week, we got The Goldfinch and Hustlers. I think they both look... I kind of think Hustlers looks okay.
Maybe. I don't know. I've not read anything about it.
I followed on Instagram.
Hey, I mean, there could be a couple good things in there. I don't know. It's not really my cup of tea. I think my girlfriend's pretty excited about it, so.
I mean, it's a female director, all female cast for the most part, and so I don't know. I like female empowerment movies that involve strippers. I mean, it's.
With the Goldfinch coming out next week, we're going to do a Nicole Kidman tribute episode. So To Die For will be the classic, and we'll talk about classic Nicole Kidman, The Hours, Moulin Rouge, The Others.
Yeah. Among others.
Yeah. She's very good, you know, and that was the difference maker. Like, you could do the same thing with Jennifer Lopez, but Jennifer Lopez has made
out of sight,
more
Selena, maybe Hustlers.
She's done far more shitty movies than she has good movies. I think she made the same movie where she played like a high-powered woman in a man's profession more than one time, or she,
yeah.
Or the underdog woman with the, I don't know, yeah.
It's hard to imagine awful. Jennifer Lopez as an underdog.
Just so many bad movies that she's made that all seem the same.
And like three good ones, if Hustler's good.
Well, we're passing on the opportunity to talk about Geely. Oh. No, wait, she wasn't in Geely.
Might as well just do Jersey Girl.
I love Jersey Girl.
Oh,
I love Jersey Girl's Girl. Good.
That was actually a good movie that she's in.
She's hardly in it, though. They cut out, like, all That's of her true. Scenes. Yeah. She's in Geely.
Oh, is she? Oh, wait. Okay. I can't remember.
That was the one that ruined Jersey Girl.
Oh, yeah. Okay. That's right.
That's why they had to cut her out of the whole movie. Also in 89, nothing of note really. The Big Picture, End Country, Night Game, Sea of Love, any of those mean anything to you?
Sea of Love is Pacino and Ellen Barkin. Supposed to
be, or Barkin, yeah.
Yeah, she's supposed to be pretty sexy in that. And, Big Picture I've seen a lot. That's Kevin Bacon trying to make a movie. He's a director and he's dealing with lots of Hollywood weirdos.
You guys ever watched that Kevin Bacon cop car movie?
No.
It's good.
Yeah?
It's from the guy who did... the Spider-Man movies, the most recent ones. That's the movie that kind of broke him.
Huh.
Yeah, it's on my Netflix list. It's on Netflix still, I think.
Yeah, it's about basically these kids run away from home. They see an empty cop car. They just start goofing around in it. They steal it. And it ends up being Kevin Bacon's cop car, but he's also a serial killer.
Huh.
So then, it's just a pretty interesting movie. Kind of wish that guy could have directed it. No offense to the guy who did
Andy Muschietti.
I kind of think the Duffer Brothers would have been a pretty good choice for it. Because I know they were originally like chosen for it, and then they obviously got Stranger Things and stuff. So I feel like that would have been a better attempt.
I do think it would have worked better as a Netflix movie or something like, not movie, but like a series.
Yeah
like or, a 10 episode show or something like
one
that.
One of the things that, just to return to it for just a moment, is that
got time.
One of the things that it reminds me a lot of when they make a biopic of somebody who's still alive, like you've got to adhere to what they want and make them look good. So they're just kind of putting over Stephen King and Stephen King's ideas and what he wants, and they can't veer too far into making the kind of movie that they want to make. You know, they've got to remain loyal to the people who think this book is amazing for whatever reason. They've got to try and make Stephen King happy, and that just doesn't work.
the word bio, why biopics work better though, is because you know the story, so you can bring that to the movie. You can't really bring it to the movie, the book, because they changed enough of it that it, you know, the whole, like the whole turtle doesn't even play a role in this movie. And that's a big part of the book.
I was just reminded of the turtle today, and I'm like, you know what? That would have been a better scene, actually. That would actually made all this a little bit more. Cut out all the stuff about the totems and just have the turtle tell them, here's how you beat him. Like, that's a much better way to play the movie, actually.
Keep the orgy out.
I mean, yeah, no.
I don't want to see that at all.
That's fine where it's at.
So, wow. Cancel culture. We have a cancel culture, and yet we still have Stephen King.
Yeah.
I'm kidding.
I know. But what's so frustrating about it is because I saw the movie, so now I have characters in my head, you know, so now I'm picturing these characters do that stuff, and I don't want to, but I'm listening.
Yeah.
And it's just really awkward and uncomfortable.
Yeah. Oh, God, thanks for putting that in my head.
Well, you didn't have to listen to it at work. And I think she's a good young actress. I loved her in she did a show where she played a younger Amy Adams, who she really looks like Amy Adams, even more so than Jessica Chastain. But I thought she was really good in that, too. I don't know. Just a weird choice by Stephen King. I know how we can get out of here. Hop on. One at a time.
Choo-choo.
Literally what happens.
What am I going to do with my horror novel? I know. I'll have them run a train on her.
How old are they again? 11? Okay, I don't care.
Kids are doing this now. It's okay.
Got any more cocaine?
He's talking to the clown as he writes.
Remember that time I almost died?
Turtles. Fuck yeah, turtles.
Fuck yeah.
He's talking to the turtle the whole time. The turtle's telling the story. Turtle's like, I don't want to be in it. Too bad. They need to make a movie about the writing of it.
That's a fucking great idea. I bet James McAvoy could kill that.
Yeah, ugly him up a little bit.
And just him in a cocaine haze and a typewriter. All these weird images come by him.
Or Bill Hader. I would love to see him doing that.
That would be an awesome HBO show. That's what he needs to do that after Barry. Once that wraps up.
Thank you to our Patreon supporters. Our key grip level, Christina Cato. Oh, no, she's the one up. Jason Bryant, and who else is in her? Oh, Charlie Messing. Our character actor level, Christina Cato, Cousin Jeff, and Josh and Beth Paul. Our special effects level, Corey Finneran and Sarah Morrell, and our movie star, Dave Sievers. If you want to be a Patreon supporter, head over to ihatecritics.net/Patreon to get yourself a credit on the show. There's also our podcast merch tab there, along with a PayPal tab. Flickchart.
Yeah. Sure.
In Bruges, Babe Pig in the City.
I mean, I think Babe Pig in the City, I mean, Josh
part
will
two,
hate me.
Part two.
He'll hate me for this, but I say it's really overrated, so.
He likes Babe.
He likes them both, I think.
Oh, maybe he likes the other one. I know he loves Babe. But like
In Bruges is a really great movie.
Yeah, oh yeah.
I agree. Plus, I don't think he listens anymore, so we're good. Although we're coming up on episode 400, you think I'll come back for that?
I would hope so. I mean, jeez, Josh.
Panic Room, Alien versus Predator.
Panic Room.
Alien versus Predator, but only because I don't think I've actually seen Panic Room.
Fair enough. I'll go Panic Room. Pulp Fiction, Jeepers Creepers.
Pulp Fiction.
City of Angels, Home Alone.
This is so weird because, you know, like anytime In the Waves trailer, there's a scene of a girl on a bike. And anytime I see characters on bikes, and especially when they're doing that thing where they stand up on the bike and they put their... It's Meg Ryan. It becomes Meg Ryan in my head getting hit by a truck. It's so weird that that movie pops up now. It's Home Alone, obviously. But just a weird connection that my brain makes.
I'll go with Home Alone.
That's fine. Although I kind of wonder, like, having not seen that in forever and knowing Nicolas Cage like I do now, if it would make it any different watching it again today.
I read an article earlier, and Nicolas Cage wants to get into an Ari Aster movie really bad.
Really?
So,
wow.
We might have that to look forward to.
I don't know.
I know.
I mean, he was pretty awesome in Mandy.
But that movie, yeah. He would have been terrible in Midsommar, though, or in Hereditary, for that matter.
Yeah, he wouldn't have fit any of those
characters.
There's
time to make one now. We can make a Nicolas Cage one.
It would have to be he'd have to be the main character, and I mean, he could definitely do it. Ari Aster is amazing. The Thomas Crown Affair 99 or Total Recall 90.
I don't know. Thomas Crown. It's more boringly efficient than Total Recall is fun bad.
Total Recall, three titties.
Thomas Crown Affair, Rene Russo's titties. Scary Movie 2, Zombieland.
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 Super Troopers, About Schmidt.
About Schmidt.
Super Troopers.
It's About Schmidt.
I know you guys aren't Super Troopers fans.
Don't care for that movie at all.
I'm neither here nor there on it, but I always feel bad that we don't have a Super Troopers representative on the podcast, especially,
I got you guys.
Especially when Part 2 came out.
I don't have you on that one, but I got you on that first one.
Well, but the first one was a classic, and we just sat there, and it was, I don't know.
Hate.
James and the Giant Peach, 28 Weeks Later.
28 Weeks Later.
28 Weeks Later.
Agreed. Black Panther, Charlotte's Web.
Black Panther.
Black Panther.
Agreed. Starsky and Hutch, Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
Starsky and Hutch is not bad, though.
Mm-mm. But still.
Yeah, it's still Roger Rabbit, yeah.
The Sound of Music, Kingdom of Heaven.
Sound of Music.
Kingdom of Heaven.
I'll go Sound of Music. The Hunger Games, Catching Fire, The Hangover Part 2.
Whew. I'll go... It's tough.
It's the same thing.
I really like both those movies a lot.
I do too, but like they both are literally like the same movie done the second time.
I'll go Catching Fire.
I'm going to go Hangover.
I'll go Hangover too. Babel, Coffee and Cigarettes.
Babel.
Babel.
Yeah, fuck Jim Jarmusch. Sorry, after that last one, I'm done. Three Amigos, Event Horizon.
Three Amigos.
Three Amigos.
Go Event Horizon just for fun. Taken or Yellow. I don't know what Yellow is. Looks like a dance movie.
Huh.
Apparently you don't either. Taken or Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas?
Whew. Gosh. I mean, I really enjoyed Taken. So,
yeah,
not Taken. That I don't enjoy Fear and Loathing. I do in a weird way. I just don't know how I feel about it.
I'll go with Fear and Loathing, only because I know I can kick Liam Neeson's ass.
I feel like I need to rewatch that, because I had, like, back a few years ago in the whole... delinquent period, everyone was like, you need to watch this. I was like, fuck yeah, man. Wasn't really into it, but I've since then I've gotten more familiar with like Hunter S. Thompson and stuff. I want to go back and
like Depp's performance.
I think it's a movie that it's one of those recency bias type things where after you see it, you like it for a while and then you kind of forget about it. Mm-hmm. And then you see it again, you like it again. Like Josh liked it. We liked it on the show a lot. But it's not, it's weird enough that it's not memorable, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I just remember like the thing with the birds, and that's pretty much about it.
You remember
it.
The weirdness, but you don't remember the movie specifically.
Yeah, I'm struggling to remember it now.
And I'm pretty sure I can beat up Liam Neeson, so I'm going Fear and Loathing. But if you guys want Taken, that's fine. At least an old man Neeson, maybe not a younger one. Castaway, Goldeneye.
Castaway.
I'll go with Goldeneye.
I don't like either one of them, but I'll go with Castaway just for the performance. Birdman or Stone, 1974. I don't know what that is. Birdman or Borat?
Birdman.
I'll go Birdman.
Yeah, it's easy Birdman for me, but I really like Borat a lot. E.T. or Pee-wee's Big Adventure?
I'm all about Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
Yeah?
All about it.
E.T.
It's E.T. for me.
I don't really have... It's strange how little passion I have for E.T., though. It's the first movie I ever saw. And I know there's a lot of nostalgia there, I guess, but I don't ever go back to E.T.
It was a big part of my childhood, but I think the last time I saw it was when they re-released it in theaters, when they added that really weird CGI scene where he took a bath or something like that. It was like at least sure 10 years ago. Oh, I guarantee.
And they took away the guns.
Yeah. Like, it was the walkie-talkie. They threw him in the bathtub. It was weird.
Back to the Future, Braveheart.
Back to the Future.
Back to the Future.
Braveheart for me. Nice.
Yeah. Oh man, that's one of my favorites. I do even like 3. I love Back to the Future, man.
I like 3 better than 2.
Really?
Yeah. Finding Neverland, Wanted.
Finding Neverland.
Wanted.
It's Finding Neverland, but I don't. Wanted's fun.
It's guilty pleasure one for me.
The Fifth Element, Blade.
Fifth Element. If it were Blade 2, it would be Blade 2.
Mm-hmm. Friday the 13th, 8mm.
Which Friday the 13th?
The original.
I'll still go with 8mm.
Friday the 13th.
It's Friday the 13th. That's the first horror movie I saw. I know it's not good, but...
It's iconic.
8mm is wacky, though.
I need to rewatch it with my new Nicolas Cage in mind. The Martian, The Holiday.
The Martian, though. I love The Holiday.
The Martian.
Yeah.
Is The Holiday, that's the one with Cameron Jack
Diaz
Black.
And Kate Winslet, Jack Black, Jude Law.
That was pretty good.
Yeah.
Rogue One or Sling Blade?
Wow, that's... I mean, because I'll never watch Sling Blade again.
You can watch Rogue One again.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd watch Rogue One again.
It's one of my all-time favorite Star Wars movies.
I was positive on Rogue
One. Well, I was positive on it, too. I'm just never going to watch it again.
I'm never going to watch Sling Blade again, though. Rogue One.
Yeah, I go Rogue One. I hold that pretty high.
I'll go Sling Blade just because Star Wars doesn't serve to win anything. Commando or Jurassic Park?
Jurassic Park.
Jurassic Park.
Agreed. About Schmidt, Annie Hall. Cancel culture.
if everything that we ever knew, if Jack Nicholson stuff ever came out, I'm sure he would be.
I feel like, I mean, no offense to Jack Nicholson, but I feel like there's a lot of money keeping stuff from coming out. I love you, man, until bad stuff comes out, but I feel like bad stuff's coming out.
I feel like it's there somewhere.
Well, I mean, Roman Polanski's thing happened at his house. So, I mean, there's that.